Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
It is time for our farming slot. Mary Phelan from Farmers Journal joins us once again. Good afternoon, Mary.
Good afternoon, Sean.
We were already ahead of you there, talking about eggs and things.
You were, but can I just say that I really relate to the lady who texted in about men telling her to smile. I am one of those people with a resting bitch face.
No, and you don't.
Oh, no, apparently I do. I'm always told I'm giving evil looks and really bitchy looks without even realising it. And over the years, and a friend of mine was the same, the two of us were always being told to smile by men, and it's the most irritating thing in the world.
Yeah, and when men would say that to you, what do you think their motivation was in saying it to you?
I've no idea. No idea, because it just irritated me. I never felt that they were using it as a way to chat me up or anything. They just, people can be very past remarkable, I guess. And I think I do genuinely, though, have quite a natural evil look that I give out without realising it at all. So maybe I'm the problem and not them, and they're just
No. Because I would guess, I'm just guessing here, but I would guess that it doesn't happen very often that unattractive women have men jumping out in front of them saying, smile.
I don't know. That was never the impression I got.
And if you see a woman walking down the street and if she is genuinely given evils all over the place, you'd be scared to go up to her say smile, because you don't know what kind of response you might get.
But you might be wondering what's wrong at the same time. What has this person in such a vicious mood that they're,
But the phrase, mind your own feckin' business, might have, wandered through their mind. Anyway, the price of wool has collapsed.
It has. So I was in here about 2 months ago talking to you about sheep shearing. So sheep shearing season was well and truly underway. The weather was very nice at the time. But the price of wool, it has collapsed. The wool check used to pay, some of the bills on the farm years ago. It really was a substantial amount of money. And just before I tell you what the price is now, just to recap, last year, or in 2014, you were getting €1.30 to €1.35 for a kilo. 2015, that went up to €1.40 to €1.45. Last year, it dropped to €1 a kilo, and this year it's down to 60 cents a kilo. So that is a huge, since 2014, it's gone basically, or since 2015, it's gone from €1.45 a kilo to 60 cents a kilo. So basically what's happening is that farmers aren't even covering the cost of shearing with what they're getting for wool. So you get an average of 2.5 kilos off every sheep. So that means what you're getting, with the price being 60 cents a kilo, you're getting €1.50 per sheep for the wool. Mm. And the cost of shearing is between €1.80 and €2.50 per head.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's sad that something, I guess, a commodity that used to be so valuable, that it's really costing farmers to take it off the sheep, and they're really doing it for welfare reasons, because sheep simply get too hot during the summer. But it's actually worse again, because those prices that I quoted you are for lowland sheep. If you have hill sheep, the price is actually between 20 to 40 cent a kilo, and that's because they have black wool, kind of black fibres around their neck, and apparently the black fibres don't take dye very well, so those fleeces aren't as in demand from say manufacturers that make carpets. So really what it's been attributed to is the fact that there's less of a demand from China. So apparently there's a lot of environmental regulations coming into China at the moment. So in the tanneries and the different manufacturers that would be using wool to produce different things like carpets, they're being subject to a lot of regulations about how they treat their wool and how they wash it. And then there's also a slowdown in the Chinese economy. So there's less carpets required for the houses. People are buying less new cars. So there's less carpets required for the cars. So that's kind of where it's coming from. But I was quite interested to discover that Prince Charles has been to the forefront of promoting wool. This was something I didn't realise. And he wrote a very interesting article in the Daily Telegraph. Now, it was in September 2016, but he started off by saying, imagine if a new fibre was invented that, had all of these seemingly miraculous properties, something that would grow naturally. It only needs grass and water. It's an excellent insulator. It remains warm even when it's wet. It's fire retardant. It absorbs shocks and sound, and it's entirely biodegradable. So in this article, it showed Prince Charles burying a synthetic jumper and a jumper made from wool in his back garden in Clarence House. And then 6 months later, he dug it up and the wool...
Now, let's be precise here. He got someone else to dig it up.
Well, Charles is in the picture with a shovel, and the woolen jumper had completely, you know, it was biodegraded, or whatever the term is, into the soil, whereas a synthetic jumper was absolutely fine and you could put it into the washing machine and wash it and wear it. So he does, you know, I really got the impression that he genuinely cares about the wool industry and the farmers. And I was talking to our sheep editor today and I said, you know, what's the crack with Charles? You know, he seems to really care. And Darren says, no, I've been very, very impressed with his efforts. So it's not for want of high profile celebrities, I guess, trying to help the industry, but that's kind of sadly where it's at the moment.
But isn't it astonishing the amount of influence that China has on so many aspects of our economy?
Yeah, of course. So, and I mean, we're always looking to the West at the moment, obviously with our exports as well and Brexit and, you know, from all aspects of the agri industry, you know, China can have such a huge impact.
So, I mean, if now, presumably you have sheep and so you have to shear the sheep anyway, whether you can sell the wool or not. But now you're running effectively at a loss on
that
sheep.
Now, what you can,
the wool, I mean.
What some people do is maybe store the wool. So you can store it and maybe wait a year or two and hope that the price goes up. Now, I imagine with farmers, you know, liquidity is often an issue and cash flow. So maybe you might want to sell the wool for whatever you can, because maybe you can't afford to wait, even though you would get more in a year or two. Maybe you actually can't afford to wait a year or two to sell it. You just take what you can get and offset as much of the cost as you can. But I mean, I just remember growing up, my dad, I remember every time the sheep would be shorn and dad would be given out, usually about the price of wool. Now, the last time it was this bad was about 8 years ago in Ireland. It dropped to 50 cent a kilo. So it does fluctuate in the extreme. It's quite extreme, the fluctuations. But I do remember my dad, you know, regularly enough giving out about the price of wool. And he'd be looking at me and being like, oh, it's all ye young ones now. You won't buy woolly jumpers in the shops. But I actually, when I was in college, and my boyfriend at the time will attest to this, I used to walk to UCD, as many students did. And I'd have about a 15 or 20 minute walk, and it was actually quite important that any clothes you bought during college were warm. So I was always going around checking the wool content on cardigans or on proper coats, because it is amazing the difference it makes if there's even 30 or 40% wool in a cardigan or a coat, the difference in how warm it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I assume there's few or perhaps none in terms of places that wool is bought in Ireland.
There's fewer, sorry.
Yeah, the you know, are there any manufacturers of carpets or clothing who buy wool domestically?
I'm not sure about that, but I guess what's probably having the most impact is all of these shops that we have, where everybody's buying all their clothes from high street stores, and a lot of those clothes are being manufactured, you know, with synthetic materials in countries abroad using cheap material and cheap labour. So I imagine that that's a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah, there's probably not so much of it anymore. Now, go back to birds again.
Yes.
They're causing havoc for the ESB.
Yeah, so it's a big problem in rural Ireland at the moment. The ESB has told the Farmers Journal that they have had 1,400 power outages in 2016 due to wildlife, and over 70% of these occurred over the summer months and in early autumn. So really, June is the month. Say last year there was 300 outages in June compared to maybe 200 in July and August, 115 in May, and then really, you know, the end of the year and the start of the year, there'd only be about 30 or 40. So the reason it's can be so high this time of the year is because you have all of these birds migrating into the country. So there's a bigger population of birds. And what's happening, especially with the bigger birds, is that they crash into the power lines because they don't see them. Apparently swans, I think, the way their eyes are, wherever they're placed, they fly kind of looking at the ground, and they fly along the path of a river or something, and they're not really looking ahead.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that, you know, the way you see all these birds, hundreds and thousands of them sitting on the power lines. Mm. So apparently if the birds are perched on one line, they're okay. But once they straddle two of them, or once they're touching a wire and also maybe touching the pole that's grounded, they can be electrocuted, and that leads to a short circuit, which causes a fuse to blow, and that's why the power goes.
Yeah.
So, that's an interesting one at the moment.
Well, you'd think there'd be something they could do about that. I don't know getting the birds to see it, but it's even stopping them stepping on two wires and frying themselves.
Well, I guess they have game guards on overhead networks in high risk areas. They have ultrasonic wildlife deterrent devices. There's regular inspections to identify a lot of activity near their network. So these are the measures they're taking. But I was kind of interested to know why the birds are congregating on these power lines in the first place. And apparently one of the things I found out was that they like to meet up on the wires before they embark on their migration. So it's kind of a meeting point. But then the opposite, sometimes they avoid the wires because during breeding season, much like in the human population, I guess, if you're going out to a club and there's a whole lot of competition at the bar, you know, maybe you mightn't be as likely to chat up the boy or girl that you fancy. Same with birds, they'll avoid the power lines during breeding season because there's too much competition and they're trying to find their mate. And then you might also notice with the birds that they all quite often sit facing the same direction. So I was like, why is that? So apparently that's because they sit facing the wind, and if they didn't do that, their feathers would literally be ruffled and they would lose body heat. And apparently it's easier to take off and to land if you're facing the wind, like an aeroplane, apparently. Maybe I stand
that's
to be correct on that. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, a power line is like the coppers of the bird world.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So, but I mean, this is causing havoc for farms as well, as like any other business. I can't single out farmers here, but I mean, you're a dairy farmer, you're milking your cows, all of a sudden the power goes and the clusters fall out off, the milk pump shuts off, the cooler shuts down, and you and the cows have to wait around until the power starts up again. So obviously it's, you know, impeding on a lot of people, and 1400 in 1 year due to wildlife. Squirrels apparently do it as are a problem as well, but that's a lot in 1 year.
Yeah, that is a lot. Now, there's been a survey on crime. Is this now crime in the agricultural sector or in rural Ireland?
So this is actually specifically crime, agricultural crime. Everyone, I think we're all quite well used to hearing about rural crime. A lot of the time, rural crime involves a lot of agricultural crime, but this is a survey. It's called the Agricultural Crime in Ireland Report, so specifically about agriculture, and it looks at the financial costs of agricultural crime in Ireland. What I found very interesting about it was that, first of all, the average cost to a victim who has gone through agricultural crime, and 66% of the survey respondents have been a victim of it. So that's obviously a huge percentage, and that would reflect what we've been reporting on in the Farmers Journal in the last few years. So that's between the 1st of January 2014 and the end of May 2016. Two-thirds of respondents, basically. And the average cost of the crime to them was €4,300. The kind of three main areas of crime were in terms of the theft of fuel, tools and machinery and equipment. But what the survey actually kind of remarked on was that while they were trying to work out the financial costs, which is kind of specifically what this survey set out to do, they noted that there's a lot more costs that are you can't really measure. And, you know, they have comments here. Somebody suffered from a nervous breakdown and had serious health effects as a result of the crime. Somebody else said they were left fearful. Someone else said they spent a lot of time thinking and worrying about it. So really, the impact of the fear of crime and the effect that it would have on your quality of life. And then they also looked at the average time that farmers spent, or victims of agricultural crime spent, trying to remedy the situation, I guess trying to fix things and go to the guards and all the rest of it, was 14.1 hours. So they mentioned that, or measured that as well, which I thought that was interesting as well, because we all know life admin, and this is more than life admin, but I actually expected that it would be a lot more than 14 hours. So obviously the effect that has on your working week and all the rest of it.
Now, finally, the all-female silage crew. What are they attempting to do?
So this is actually not until, I think it's the 19th of August. It's in Mount Mellery down in Waterford. There is monks down there and there is a silage weekend taking place to raise funds for the Irish Alzheimer Society of Ireland. So what they're doing is they're trying to put together break a Guinness World Record for an all-female silage crew. And apparently one lady by the name of Joan Dahill will be the oldest. She is 70 years of age and she will be driving a tractor that she used to drive in 1977 that has since been restored. So yeah, they're, it's basically, I guess, a publicity stunt to draw attention to the event, which is a charity event. But what's even more interesting is that the team of silage ladies, or the female silage crew, is going to be backed up by a team of mechanics called the Socket Rockets. So this is also an all-female crew. What they do, their kind of stunt, and it's really entertainment, is they put together a Ferguson 20 tractor, which is a tractor from the early 1950s. So they start off with about 40 to 50 different parts. They've got the wheels, they've got the mudguards, and they have about 200 nuts and bolts and studs. And 12 minutes, they build this Ferguson 20 tractor. And this is their party piece. And I said, you know, are these ladies farmers? Are they mechanics? Are they electricians? So I was talking to Jerry O'Sullivan today. He's head of the Socket Rockets. Did I call them Pocket Rockets? Because they're Socket Rockets.
No, you did. No, you called them Socket Rockets.
Socket Rockets. One of them is a barmaid, another is a waitress, another is a hairdresser, another is a childminder, another is an office administrator, and another lady is in the army. So her experience might be a bit more relevant. But I think it's really interesting that their jobs are nothing to do really with farming or with mechanics. So they're the backup, and that's their stunt. And apparently they've done it all over Munster to raise funds, and they've even done it in a pub.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
12 minutes to build a tractor.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
It's the 19th of August. Around that time in August. Yeah.
Okay, well, keep an eye out for that, folks. Mary Phelan is now returning to the Farmer's Journal to scowl at some of our colleagues. Mary, thanks a million for coming into us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big cheque for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.